We are right now on Perek Revi'i Mishnah Tes. Again, you know, I know that my Mishnayos are not all in sync because I'm going by like a few different counts, but fine. We're back in our Bnei Yonah count. We're on Mishnah Tes. Okay, where's my little bookmark thing? Here it is. All right, let's read. Let's learn. Welcome, everybody. Let's go. Welcome back to Esti, who has been in law school and is now back with our chavura, and we're very, very happy to see her. Thank you, Esti, for rejoining. We're so happy to have you. Okay, good. Ready? Rabbi Yonasan Omer. Rabbi Yonasan says, Kol hamakayim es haTorah me'oni. Anybody who upholds the Torah even in poverty. The even, I guess, is, you know, my extra word. So let's do literal translation. Kol hamakayim, anyone who fulfills the Torah me'oni from poverty. Sofo l'kayma me'osher. In the end, eventually, will uphold it from wealth. V'kol hamevatel es haTorah me'osher. And anybody who nullifies the Torah from wealth, sofo levatla me'oni. In the end, will nullify it from poverty. Okay, so again, that was the literal translation. Now I'm going to do the more general vernacular. I'm not trying to trick you with anything here. Sometimes I am. Here I'm not. Kol hamakayim es haTorah me'oni. Anyone who keeps the Torah while they're poor, sofo l'kayma me'osher. In the end, will keep it while they're wealthy. Kol hamevatel es haTorah me'osher. Anyone who, whatever the word mevatel is, mevatel. Let's just use that word. We all know what it means, I think. From the Torah, from wealth, sofo l'vatel me'oni. In the end, will be mevatel. It will make it like secondary. From poverty. So what are our main questions on this Mishnah? Again, we should have a few. The first thing we do, we read it, and then we start asking ourselves questions, like what, the first thing, what is going on? But that's always, so let's be more specific than that. What's going on? Can I get you gum?
No.
Can you throw out your gum?
No.
What do you think? Yeah, but Ari, I'm in the middle of teaching a Torah class. I'm going to do it when I'm done, okay? Otherwise, you could do it for yourself. Yeah, my screen is away from you. My screen is away from you. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead. Hi, guys. What are our thoughts? Oh, good. Essie's raising her hand.
Sorry. I was thinking, why is there an assumption that... there almost seems to be an assumption that a person will experience both poverty and wealth at the same time in their life. And not at the same time, but at one point in their lifetime.
Good.
But it doesn't necessarily hold true.
Good. Okay, good. So what you're saying is basically like, how is this Mishnah true? All right, let's be very frank about this. Like, you're telling me that how somebody treats it in poverty is going to make them wealthy if they do it the right way, and how someone does it in richness is going to make them poor if they do it the wrong way. But this doesn't really work with what we see in the world. So what Esti's saying in a more delicate way is like, how is this working? Is this literal? Right? That's the first question. Is this literal? Is the first question you're really asking, right? Like, what do you mean? Are you really telling me this is going to happen? Good. So that's like the first question. And the second one being a corollary of that, is basically, well, how does it work, right? Is this literal, and like, what's at play here? How are we saying that whatever it is that we're saying happens, how does it happen? Like Esti is saying, are we saying that it's a natural process that everyone's definitely going to experience wealth and poverty? Is it just like natural? Is something like causing something else? Like, is it like a supernatural thing happening, right? Like, what's going on? Okay, good, perfect. Esti, those are the onset questions. So before we actually go into Rabbeinu Yonah and Reverse, that's kind of what we're doing here. This Chabura has really become Rabbeinu Yonah and Reverse because they usually give like very complimentary, but sort of like different angles. Let's talk about, I'm sorry, I have a cold. I'm going to be like sniffling and drinking tea. So apologies for the socially awkward part of that, but you can't catch anything over the computer. So that's good. So what are the different subjects at play in this Mishnah? There are two spectrum pieces, like opposites, basically. There are two things that are opposites, and there are two things that are stable. So let's talk about the factors at play in this Mishnah. I'm going to read it to you again, okay? There are two opposite things listed in the Mishnah, and there are two stable things in the Mishnah, and how they interact with each other is where we're going to get the moral of the story here, right? The third question always being, like, so what? What does this mean to us? Like Esti maybe is saying, who are, like, probably neither particularly poor nor particularly wealthy, like, what is this trying to teach me? What? Yeah. I'll come check on you when I'm done. Okay. So what are the mechanisms at play? Let me read you the Mishnah again. Ready? Rabbi Yonasan Omer, Kol ha-mekayim es ha-Torah mi-oni, sofo l'kayimah mi-osher. Anybody who keeps the Torah while poor, in the end will keep it while rich. V'kol ha-mevatel es ha-Torah mi-osher, sofo l'vatla mi-oni. And anyone who nullifies the Torah from wealth, in the end will nullify it from poverty. So what are the spectrum pieces? What are the two things that are opposing each other? Contrasting concepts. Come on. No, is my question not clear? Or are you guys all just like waiting for someone else to say something? Sorry, say it again. Someone said something.
The keeping versus the nullifying.
Good. So there's Mekayim. I'm writing it on my piece of paper for whatever reason, even though you guys can't see it. But then I'll hold it up to the camera. Mekayim versus Mevatel are the two contrasting, right? Either you're Mekayim or you're Mevatel. You're picking one of the two. What's the other thing that are contrasting to each other?
Poverty and wealth.
Good. Oni and Osher, right? Poverty and wealth. You're at one end of the spectrum or the other, which again was part of Esty's question, right? Are we really all the way at one end of the spectrum? Is that how life works, right? There's Oni and Osher and Mevatel and Mekayim. What are the two constant pieces of this Mishnah? There's actually three that I realized as I was just reading it right now, but we don't have to be so philosophical about it. Hi, Shifra. Guys, my kids are not asleep yet. Hi. Would you like to sit on the couch and listen to me teach Torah? Great. So what are the two constants or three constants of this Mishnah? Rabbi Yonasan Omer, Kol ha-mekayim es ha-Torah me'oni, sofo l'kayima me'osher, v'kol ha-mevatel es ha-Torah me'osher, sofo l'vatla me'oni. What are the constants that are not spectrums, but they are pieces of this Mishnah? We cannot, if we took any of these out, the Mishnah would make no sense. We can call them characters, but they're not characters in a play, right? But there are pieces that, if you take them out, the Mishnah falls apart.
Torah.
Good. That was one.
Whoever.
Good.
The person.
You. Good. Whoever it's addressing. Good. And what's the third one?
Fulfillment.
What do you mean by fulfillment?
Well, keeping, like, cover, like, keeping the Torah, like, fulfilling, like, what
good.
The Torah
says. That's Mekayim versus Mevatel, right? Those are the two that are the spectrum. Some people are keeping it. So, again, there's you and there's the Torah, right? And you and the Torah interact with each other in two different ways. You're Mekayim or Mevatel, and you yourself are Oni or Osher, right? So, again, you and the Torah are remaining constant, and there's this ping-pong back and forth between the other concepts. And, again, we're going to see what Rami Yonah does with that and what Rav Hirsch does with it. I think the third constant, which I was thinking about right now, is, like, time. Right? There's some progress happening here. It's really like a time frame. If you were this at some time, you will be this at a different time. And if you're this at one time, you'll be a different time at a different time. But fine, that's like getting too philosophical. We don't have to say that, okay? So we're just going to say Torah and you, Mekayim and Mevatel, Oni and Osher. Okay, so let's go to Rabbeinu Yonah. Listen to how, and again, where he starts and how he's defining his concepts. Here we go. Rabbeinu Yonah. Kol mekayim es ha-Torah me'oni. Anyone who keeps the Torah from poverty. So that's what he's dealing with first. Shadocha she'osav u'maniach melachto hatzricha leparnasaso kedi lekayim ha-Torah ba-mitzvah. So he pushes off the hours and he leaves his profession aside for, again, a little bit of time in order to be mekayim the Torah. So he needs to work, let's say he's a shoemaker, right? So he, instead of working 12 hours a day at shoemaking, he works 9 hours a day at shoemaking. So for 3 hours a day, he could learn Torah. Okay? Learn and do Torah. So it's, okay, right? V'hu lo meid v'osa mitzvos mitoch hadchak. And no matter what pressure he has from the outside, he learns and does mitzvos. So how is he defining mekayim es ha-Torah? Kol mekayim es ha-Torah mi'oni. How does he define mekayim? To keep the Torah. He means practically, you spend time doing and learning Torah. Okay? So that's his definition of it. And what mechanism is at play? Now he's about to answer that question. So full of the comments. So what is he doing? He's practically, we're talking very practically here. Rabbi Yonah is almost always very practical, right? So what are we talking about him doing? When we say that he's Mekayim the Torah, it means that he invests time to learn and do Torah, despite whatever time he feels the pressure to spend being, you know, making a parnasa because he's poor. So full the kaimo me'osher. In the end, he will be able to keep it from being wealthy? So again, now Esty's questions are coming into play, right? What's Rabbeinu Yonah going to say? Is this literal? Are we actually saying that he's going to become wealthy? And if so, how does that work? How is he becoming wealthy?
Shiva, I am not available. I love you so much. I'm going to be available when I'm done. I'm not available to peel your nail off. I'm sorry. I could do that when I'm done.
Sofa l'kaima me'osher. Ki yisasher v'nosaf lo od shaos meruvachos la'asok batorah l'kaima mitzvos. So when he becomes wealthy, and now he has more time to spend learning Torah and doing mitzvos, ki parnasa so tiyem merubav lo yitzterech al yegia kapav yikiyocha. He will have more time to learn, because he's going to become wealthy. Yilmad b'simcho b'tuv levav, and he'll learn happily. Ki b'chachma yiyeh lo kol tuv, because he has gained wisdom by learning Torah, and therefore he has everything that's good. Like, again, this is a little bit all in parentheses, but I'll review it. He says, just like we see by Shlomo HaMelech, Sheshal HaChachma V'lo Shal Kesef Zahav, that Shlomo asks for wisdom and does not ask for money. Mashal, this is just interesting, okay? Mashal HaMelech She'amar La'avdo, it's a mashal to a king that says to a servant, Shal Ma Etzin Lach, ask me something and I'll give it to you. Amar Ha'eved, the servant says to himself, Imeshal Kesef Zahav, who knows Sanli? If I ask for money, he's going to give me a lot of money. Imeshal Nechosim, the Karkaos, who knows Sanli? And if I ask for any property, he's going to give it to me. Amar Eshales Bas HaMelech Lili Isha. Ah, I'm going to ask for his daughter. V'hakol Bechla. And then I'll get everything. So that is the mashal that Rabbeinu Yonah uses to talk about Shlomo HaMelech. That it's not that he wanted Chachma because he didn't want anything else. It's because he wanted Chachma because he wanted everything else, and that was the best way to get it. So what is Rabbeinu Yonah saying? Okay, let's just read that. I'm going to ask for Chachma, and everything is included. So according to Rabbeinu Yonah, by what mechanism is he getting wealthy? Is it supernatural or is it natural so far in Rabbeinu Yonah? He seems to be talking about a very natural process. You learn Torah, and by learning Torah, you become wise and better and smart. And by being wise and better and smart, you know what? You're going to make a lot more money. That's Rabbeinu Yonah so far. So is he taking it literally? Give me a yes or no. Yes. You literally will become wealthy. You were poor, you literally will become wealthy. By what mechanism? Completely natural. If you spend 3 hours a day learning Torah as a shoemaker, you will make more money because Torah will make you smarter and better, and smarter and better people earn more money. Okay, so good. You guys, if you're too polite and you have very good midos, so your eyebrows are not raising, but I'm getting some expressions that look a little bit like that, okay? Let's read the second part of Rabbeinu Yonah and see if he changes up or adds, color or flavor to what we've read so far. V'kol mevatel es haTorah me'osher, okay? Anyone who does not keep the Torah, basically, or who secondaryizes Torah from wealth, in the end will secondaryize Torah from poverty, okay? Shekama pa'ami mekama sha'os yesh lo p'nai, right? This is the flip side. If mekayim means he sets aside time to learn Torah, mevatel means he does not set aside time to learn Torah or to do Torah, right? Shekama pa'ami mekama sha'os yesh lo p'nai lilmod ve'inu osa. He has time available now that he could be using to learn Torah and he doesn't. Sofo levat lame'oni. In the end, he is not going to, he again will not spend any time learning Torah, but now he'll be poor. He's going to have to keep working for his parnasa, and this time he's not going to find it. Ad ki lo yehiyeh lo p'nai la'asok b'Torah, gam ki yirtza. Until he's so involved in seeking his livelihood that he actually does not have any time. Right? His livelihood will deteriorate until he actually has to spend a lot of time making a livelihood, and then he won't actually have any time left to learn Torah. Mida k'negin mida. V'nimtza yotze min olam b'lo Torah. Mida k'negin mida. So now, according to the second part of Rabbeinu Yonah, is it literal? Is he literally going to become poor after being rich? Yes. Right? It's still literal. But what mechanism is at play? Is it now natural or now it's supernatural? Right? Mida k'negin, invoking mida k'negin mida is a very supernatural thing to do. Right? Again, supernatural, I don't mean like maybe that word has like a weird connotation. Doesn't to me, but that's why I don't want to use it because I'm not sure if it has like some pop culture connotation, right? But like it meaning it's godly, right? Hashem is intervening, so to speak, mida k'negin mida. And it's interesting because, like, Mita Konegamita, I don't know, I at first I wrote in my notes, I'm not getting into what Mita Konegamita means. But then the more that I was thinking about it, the more I'm like, no, this is what Mita Konegamita mean, right? Mita Konegamita means, or here, what he's using it to mean here, right, is actually really, really interesting in terms of telling us what Mita Konegamita generally means, which is that if you at whatever, however you interact with reality as if, that's what reality actually becomes. That's what Mita Konegamita means. The Mita with which you interact with reality becomes the Mita with which you must now interact with reality. That's what reality gives you back. So if you're wealthy and you interact with reality as if you have no time to learn, reality gives you back that you have less and less time to learn, because that's how you've interacted with reality. If you are poor and you interact with reality as if you have time to learn, you know what reality gives back to you? More time to learn. That's what Mita Konegamita is, right? It's like very interesting. I never thought of it like kind of so pushed out. But it's like, yeah, you know, the way that you assume your reality to be, again, especially in terms of a Bodhis Hashem, that's what Hashem makes your world give back to you. And it just plays according to your assumptions. And that's why we always have like the chance to switch. We could flip the switch. And when you flip the switch, Hashem has the world give you back different things. Okay, so according to Rabbeinu Yonah, again, that Mida Kenegan Mida is the important so what factor here, right? It's less about just whether or not you are poor or rich, right? But it's more that it flips on its head the assumptions that we make about reality, right? We think that people who are rich will have more time to spend on Torah, and people who are poor will have less time to spend on Torah, right? And therefore, how much time you spend on Torah is dependent on your wealth status. And what Rabbeinu Yonah does is he flips that. He says, no. Your wealth status is dependent on how much time you spend on Torah, right? That's the way this Mida Kenegan Mida works. It's not that your relationship with Torah is dependent on your wealth. And people who are wealthy have better relationships with Torah, and people who are less wealthy have less better relationships with Torah. No, that's not what's going on. It's that your wealth is dependent on your relationship with Torah. So again, what's our major problem we would ask Rabbeinu Yonah, and we will ask Rabbeinu Yonah after 120? Yes, Esty. You don't have to raise your hand here.
Sorry, I'll use that.
You could. You could. You just don't have to.
I think I have two questions. One of them is whether or not this is a guarantee, meaning is one's wealth status really going to change depending on one's, how much time one spends learning Torah.
Right.
And then the second question was, oh, great. I forgot my second question.
Okay, good. I'm not sure what your second question would be, but I would be happy to hear it, right? But this was really your first question initially, right? Which is like, in all due respect, Rabbeinu Yonah, this is not really what we see, right? It's not really what we see in the world. We don't, and we don't believe that, right? We don't believe that, you know, it would be unfair, I think, to take Rabbeinu Yonah literally. Right? To look at people who are poor and to say, you know, you must be poor because you're not really taking your Torah learning seriously. If you were really taking your Torah learning seriously and being really genuine about it, you would never have the chance to be poor because you would gain in Chachma. And in gaining in Chachma, like what Rabbeinu Yonah says, this Mishnah says, you would become a wealthy person. So the fact that you're poor must mean that you're not really Mekayim the Torah. Right? We don't really look at the world like that, and we don't want to. So again, I don't know how Rabbeinu Yonah would answer that question. All of the Rishonim take it like Rabbeinu Yonah does. All of the Rishonim take it very literally. I wouldn't say all the Rishonim. The Rishonim that I read, right? Rashi, Rambam, Rabbi Adria Bar Tanura, and Rabbeinu Yonah. They all are very much literalist about this. They all read it in a very literal way. And I don't know how they would answer that question. Like, I assume that we would ask them. I assume that they ask themselves that question. And again, you know, we'll have a great chabura with Rabbeinu Yonah himself after 120, or in times of Mashiach. Hopefully the latter will come first. And then we'll ask him and he'll let us know, okay? That's why we also do Rav Hirsch in this chabura. Because, again, I don't have like a theory per se, of why it is that Rishonim and Acharonim tend to deal with these questions differently. But I can tell you again the pattern of having read Rabbeinu Yonah and Rav Hirsch so far four Prakim into Perkei Avos. I was pretty sure Rav Hirsch would read it differently than Rabbeinu Yonah, and he does. Again, that's why we always do them together so far. We tend to do them together because they tend to take these kind of different approaches, right? Rabbeinu Yonah as a Rishon, Rav Hirsch as an Acharon, okay? Rav Hirsch adds in one little two-letter word that again, flips this Mishnah, but gets rid of that question, and that's very important. But watch what else it does to the Mishnah, okay? And you tell me what that word is. He whom, this is Rav Hirsch again, you have to pay, Rav Hirsch I think is like a little harder to understand when we read it, because he has often these like very complex linguistic sentences that you have to pay attention when the subject comes at the end of the sentence, so just prepping you that's what's going on here. He whom the lack of material wealth, joys and pleasures will bring only nearer to Torah. So he who is poor, but still the lack of what he doesn't have brings him closer to Torah, okay? To that eternally inalienable, ever-present source of all moral and spiritual riches, bliss and joy, and who finds in the Torah ample compensation for the things he must do without. He will observe the Torah even if his circumstances should improve. Okay? So somebody who is poor, this is how Rav Hirsch is reading it, someone who is poor, but who instead sees the Torah as a source for the riches, the enjoyment, right, the pleasures in life that he doesn't have materially, he will keep the Torah even should he become wealthy. Okay, I'm skipping a few lines where he elaborates on that. Not so he whom the superabundance of material possessions and pleasures makes insensitive and impervious to those moral and spiritual values that can be derived only from the faithful study and observance of the Torah. Right, contrasting to him is somebody who has all sorts of material wealth, but therefore, or also, is impervious, right, is not affected by the beauty and the richness that only the Torah has. If his wealth in earthly goods should ever crumble, he will be so utterly absorbed in desperate attempts to recoup his lost fortune that he will have neither the wish nor, he thinks, the time to seek the way that to that wealth and to that happiness which changes on earth cannot affect, and which can be found only in the study and observance of the laws of the Torah. So if that person should lose his wealth, he would be so obsessed with gaining it back that he never would be able to find that wealth in a different place that is not affected by the changes on earth, that is not affected by his material welfare, which is Torah. So what word does Rabbeinu Yonah add to this Mishnah that changes the whole meaning of it? He adds one word. Kol ha-mekayem es ha-Torah me'oni soful l'kayem me'osher. Anyone who keeps the Torah from poverty in the end will keep it from wealth. And anyone who nullifies it from wealth will in the end nullify it from poverty. Neglect it. That's a good word. What word is Rabbeinu Yonah add? I'm sorry, Rav Hirsch add. He adds the word if. If. Meaning it's not literal. I'm not telling you that somebody who is poor and who keeps the Torah will keep the Torah when he's wealthy. I'm telling you that somebody who is poor and keeps the Torah would keep the Torah if he would become wealthy. So it's really just if. And it changes this Mishnah from prescribing what will happen. Right, prescribing means someone who does it from Oni, he's going to become wealthy. Someone who doesn't from Osher, he will become Oni. It changes the Mishnah from prescribing what will happen to describing two different kinds of people. It is no longer prescriptive, it is now descriptive. It's descriptive, and this is what he does. Remember Rabbeinu Yonah? Rabbeinu Yonah sets up, and this is how we would shot-wise set up the Mishnah. There's Osher and Oni, and there's Mekayim and Mevatel. Rav Hirsch sets it up a little bit differently. He has the subject being you. And the two factors that oppose each other in his reading, besides for Osher and Oni, not really, not besides for Osher and Oni, besides for Mekayim and Mevatel, is Osher and Oni on one side and Torah on the other side. Those are the two pieces that are contrasting to each other. And this is the difference that it makes in this Mishnah. According to Rabbeinu Yonah, this Mishnah did not need to be talking about wealth. Wealth is an example of the moral that Rabbeinu Yonah is trying to draw, right? The moral being the Mida Keneged Mida, right? So the time, if you invest time from wealth, you will get, if you invest time when you're poor, you will get that time back when you're wealthy. He could have said that with not only wealth and poverty, the Mishnah, so to speak, could have said that according to Rabbeinu Yonah. You could have said it, let's say, with health and sickness, right? Somebody who finds the time to invest in Torah, even when they're sick, will also be able to invest in Torah when they're wealthy. Someone who doesn't invest in Torah when they're healthy will then not invest in Torah when they're poor. I mean, sorry, when they're unhealthy, when they're sick. Right? According to Rabbeinu Yonah, it doesn't have to be Osher. It could have been any two circumstances that show that, again, that Mida Keneged Mida, how you interact with the world will be how the world will interact with you. And therefore, again, your Torah observance is not dependent on your wealth, and it's not dependent on your health, and it's not dependent on the geographic location that you live in, right? It's not dependent on anything. That was the point of Rabbeinu Yonah. According to Rav Hirsch, it's a very different message. According to Rav Hirsch, it has to be wealth. The Mishnah specifically used wealth as the example because it pins wealth against Torah. That some people are seeking from wealth something. They're seeking from wealth enjoyment. They're seeking from wealth Torah. Richness. They're seeking from wealth value. They're seeking from wealth self-worth. That's what they're seeking from wealth. And some people don't seek that from wealth. They seek that from Torah. And those people have it. And therefore, they will have it, whether or not they are wealthy or whether or not they are poor. The life circumstances doesn't matter whether or not they have wealth or whether or not they don't have wealth, because they're not seeking it from wealth. They're seeking it from Torah. Other people are seeking it from wealth. And therefore, whether or not they have wealth becomes the centerpiece of their priority, of their existence. That becomes the thing that they're always seeking. So again, that's the setup of Rav Hirsch, is that it's an if statement, but it's not stam an if statement that doesn't matter. Why are you making this random if statement? What's the point of the Mishnah making the if statement? Because that's what the Mishnah is doing. It's setting up that he who seeks this from Torah as an always present, never changing aspect of his life will always have it. And he who seeks wealth and richness from wealth and richness will always be seeking it, even when he's wealthy. Which is, again, how I think Rav Hirsch reads the Mishnah. When it says, Sofo l'kaima me'osher, it doesn't mean, it's not a literal thing, right? It means, actually, almost, right? It's like, Kol m'kaima satorah me'one, sofo l'kaima me'osher. Anyone who is being m'kayim the Torah when he's poor, in actuality, he is rich. Because he has the Torah, and so he feels that wealth of his life. He feels that richness in his life. And anyone who's mevatel the Torah when he's wealthy, sofo l'kaima me'oni, he's actually already poor. So I think that's how Rav Hirsch again reads it and differs from Rabbeinu Yonah in terms of those of our like setup of the Mishnah. So again, the point also being like the so what factor of this Mishnah, taking a step back, being that again, what it's teaching us either way is that our relationship with the Torah is not dependent on any external context of our lives, right? The Torah, as I saw it put in Rav Volka's book, the Torah is, by the way, yeah, I emailed him, which is great, which is that the Torah is not dependent on the context of our lives, right? Whether or not we're poor or wealthy, or according to Rabbeinu Yonah, whether it's health or sickness or anything else that could have been the factors here, right? That does not determine our Avodas Hashem. Our Avodas Hashem is not dependent on the context of our lives. In every context of our lives, Avodas Hashem starts there. That's exactly where it starts. It is not dependent on the outside. And again, that is what the Mishnah is teaching us, again, at a basic level, is that whether or not we are poor or wealthy or any other context in our lives does not affect our capacity for Avodas Hashem. It does not affect our capacity, our relationship with Torah in any way. Our relationship with Torah is independent of that, and even, again, this Mishnah flips it on its head. It's that our relationship with Torah is what determines, again, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, in the literal way, the context of the rest of our lives, and not the other way around.